leaders have to think differently about why and how you're going to use your space and look at it as a strategic business tool instead of just a line item on your P&L sheet.
Welcome back to Evolving Your Workplace, where we discuss real-time workplace issues with experts to get you the best solutions for your company. I'm your host, Carol Schultz, organizational strategist and creator of the Organizational Scaffold System. Let's get into it. Greetings, everyone, and welcome back to Evolving Your Workplace. I'm Carol Schultz. I have a favor to ask. If you aren't already following us on Spotify, now's the time so you can stay alerted with each and every new episode. So in recent years, we've seen the transformation of office spaces, some disappearing completely and some expanding to live-at-work environments. What were once rows of desks with rigid lighting have evolved to cubicles and later collaborative, flexible spaces that welcomed hybrid workers. The question we ask now is, what should your company's office have in it? And I have workspace expert, founder, and CEO of SKG here with me, Beth Goff McMillan. Beth, welcome to the show, and thanks for joining me. And before we get into today's topic, tell us a little bit about what you do.
Hello, Carol, and thank you for having me. I am current CEO. I will say I'm not the original founder, and I think there was, I saw some paperwork, should have edited that, because the two people that founded this company are incredible people. I would never want to take that away from them. SKG is a 30-year-old, we are a furniture dealership. A lot of people don't even understand that this space exists, but we are essentially the workplace strategy, the design of offices, healthcare, education, spaces. And then we do the procurement, delivery, and installation of the furniture. Our core business is around furniture and architectural products. So very similar to what a car dealership does. You don't go to Mercedes for Mercedes, you go to a dealer. That's what we represent. So our design team specifically focus on how the furniture engages with the space. So we're constantly working with architects and designers all across the country on their projects. And then our designers lay out and specify the furniture. And then our teams will come in, deliver, install, and maintain all the furniture in these wonderful spaces.
Outstanding. So can you walk us through how workspace designs have changed as a whole since you've been in the business?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, So even though SKG has been around, we're actually in our 31st year.
Right.
I too have been around for that long. And so I hit this industry while in college in the early 90s. So you're coming out of the 1980s, and it wasn't that long before then that the first electrified panel systems that had actually hit the scene. So what I've seen in 30 years has gone from the original Dilbert cubicle with the high walls. You know, everybody was in the maze. I mean, I remember that being like jokes and Saturday and like the sitcom late night shows of the maze of people with David Letterman. So it went from the tall panels down to, in the right around 2000, it was all around integration of data and electrical, like very robust Cat 5, Cat 6 cables. You know, how many hundred could you lace into a panel? And then it went to basically no privacy, completely open to no one being in the office. And now that everybody's coming back, that the conversation right as COVID was happening was literally around, when is the open office to open? And then the pendulum completely swung as people came back in. There was just, it was the first time, I believe, in our industry where there wasn't a prescription. So now we're in this vortex of confusion, because before it was, if I am a law firm, this is how many square feet we should be using for your partner offices, for your paralegal. Yep. I mean, everything was very prescribed. And now everybody is like, I don't know what we do. What should we do? So it's for us. This is very incredible time to have a conversation instead of just prescribing what type of furniture and what high panel do you want? So it has changed immense, and therefore the conversations have changed right along with it.
You know, I love your comment, vortex of confusion.
Yeah, I
have to wonder if there isn't a more sort of positive or proactive way to look at that, you know, because when people ask me questions, my answer is frequently, and of course, I'm in a totally different business than you are, but we're both still in a service industry, right?
100%.
And you know, my response is often, well, it depends, right? Yeah. And I have to wonder how much of, if at all, it depends lands into your world.
That is what we love the most. And I mm-hmm. think as COVID was happening, I was doubling down as a business and what we were going to offer and how we were going to offer our mm-hmm. services. I've been waiting for this moment because our industry, yeah. and especially being in Central Texas, where we're headquartered, it was just booming. And so nobody was really asking, is there a better way? How mm-hmm. should we be doing it? What would you advise? We were literally being told, do this, do that. You know, this is that industry. This is what you need to do. It has changed. And now the conversations start with, what should we do? And that's when I pause and I'm like, well, we first need to understand why you're doing it.
Right.
But now it's not so much about the what. We can handle the what all day long. We now get to really dig into the why. And so I think for us is the more, that's how we can get people out of the vortex of confusion is mm-hmm. changing the conversation from what to why.
Exactly. I think that's actually really fantastic. Because there, you know, there should never be, let me say that, a one size fits all solution. And I've seen I've seen businesses, you know, work to offer that. Well, you know, this is the process and it works for everybody. Yeah, I call BS on that.
Yeah.
Everybody's needs are different and you need to find out, you know, what their needs are, what their requirements are, what their pain points are, or how do you solve their problem, even if it's that you're designing an office space, right?
100%. And we're very process driven, but our process is more about how do we ensure we are going to have quality control over how we're managing through, but it should never dictate what that end result should be, because that end result should be organic based on who it is that we're talking to. Every industry and every business is different. Even within just the dealership world, there are some dealers that are hybrid. Mm-hmm. We chose from the very beginning, we're not hybrid. We always will be a work from work business. Mm-hmm. Our job is to solve for the workplace. So we do that from work. Are we flexible? Yeah, but we've always been flexible. I mean, we're predominantly female. Well, we're 100% female owned. But we're so female employed, and not that men don't do an incredible job taking care of family and personal things, but we know that the majority of the childcare decisions and managing kids and managing your parents that are elderly or whatever mm-hmm. happens, that really falls on women. So yeah, we're going to be very flexible, but we're work from work. Well, that's different than other dealers. Some dealers are flex. So it really isn't even about the industry per se. It really is about the business or the school or the hospital that we're working with.
Yeah, that's interesting. So for leaders listening, what are three things that their workspaces should include to ensure success in this era?
To include, I think if leaders are listening, the first thing that I would encourage them, before we get into what, I can tell you what they should have, but I think the first thing that a leader should do is think about why they need to be in the office. Mm-hmm. And what is the end goal? And there are so many stats right now, and even with the return to work policy is not inspiring. And policy is not driving people back to the workplace. You might get butts in seats, but you might not be moving the needle in engagement and productivity. So you need to really understand, why do you want people in the office, and set the right KPIs around that. Mm-hmm. If you really want to get engagement and productivity and culture out of it, then those are the things you need to really lean into, because a return to office policy isn't going to get you there alone. So the first thing that I would encourage is dig in and understand why. I would really let employees get engaged in the process. We love it when we do this ourselves. We have just redone 3 offices of our own. When we can do some workplace surveys, they don't have to be expensive, tedious. And just because you ask them, it doesn't mean that you have to deliver. And you can communicate that. We want to hear from you. What will make you productive? So really hearing from them and then setting the office up to support the why and support how people work now is really critical. So that would be my first advice. And I think people have to look at their workplace as a strategic business tool. Right. This is where people show up. This is where your customers show up. I get that it is expensive. I mean, I just had to buy 3 offices of furniture and I get it at cost.
And yes, it's, and still it's expensive. Yeah.
It is. It really is. But when we invited our employees to come back, I was very clear I wanted to earn their commute. And that was our tagline. I will earn your commute. And what I noticed is people started dressing up for work again.
Oh, interesting.
And I was, and we're in Austin, Texas, where we have to watch. We're like, hang on to the jeans and ripped jeans because we are touring clients.
Yes,
so
yes.
We can't go too casual. And people were like, I want to dress better because this space is so nice. I feel elevated when I'm in this space. Mm-hmm. That's what I was going for. So I think for leaders have to think differently about why and how you're going to use your space and look at it as a strategic business tool instead of just a line item on your P&L sheet. Then when you think about what you put in there, the number one thing has to be around noise and sound. There are so many different ways. And we either SKG or myself, you can go to our website and see a lot of blogs that I've done or that SKG has pumped out around noise control acoustics. It can be very minimal and expensive up to, you know, we're working with a very large technology company that was founded here in Austin, and we're doing some very extreme acoustical abatements with them because now everybody's on headphones, everybody's talking on camera. And so how do you manage that and get some privacy?
Yeah, that's really interesting. You know, and I find it interesting that, you know, your people are saying, well, you know, we're in such a nice space. I want to dress up a little bit, you know, and you know, I think of myself, right? And I'm on camera and I'll always, you know, be appropriate from the waist up. And, you know, and I'm wearing yoga pants right now, right? I mean, they're nice yoga pants, believe me. Okay. Not cheap. And flip-flops, right?
Yeah.
But I certainly wouldn't dress like this at a client's office, right? You know, which isn't to say I'm going to get, you know, dolled up in a suit because nobody wears suits anymore. And at least for me, when I go visiting clients, I usually, you know, how I dress is dependent upon how they dress in their office, right? And what that looks like. You know, I've got a client out in LA, and before the first time I flew out there in April, he said, oh yeah, I'm in jeans every day. Okay. Well, listen, I've got fabulous jeans and great tops and, you know, great shoes and all the rest of that. You know, but I think that's, you know, to your point, that's the important thing, right? Is to be appropriate with the environment.
Right.
Whatever that might be, right? If you're in Houston, it might be appropriate to wear your jeans and boots.
I was in Houston.
You're calling
last
into
week
oil companies.
That's right. Absolutely. But at the same time, I mean, we walk into a lot of office buildings and they are still in heels and skirts and slacks. And
really?
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting? That's like,
It still exists. Mm-hmm. I think whether it is your office place or your wardrobe, there is an element of being approachable and accessible.
Yeah. Yes.
And that is awesome.
Yeah.
But I do love, there was definitely a sense of pride and ownership when people came back into our newly redone offices. And that was really exciting to see, you know, because they themselves wanted to feel as connected and put as much time into it as we did. So that was cool. But trust me, we do a lot of spaces that are, you know, jeans, shorts. We work with a lot of technology companies, yes, and they are super casual.
Yes.
And they work different hours, and it's very different than when we work with a law firm client. Mm-hmm. 100%.
Yeah. Exactly. So what are two things that someone should leave out of their offices?
Okay. The one thing that people used to request, not as much, but every once in a while we'll see them some more, the whole notion of people don't need to play in their office. And I think this whole notion of the games and, you know, yeah, we are just leaving our trade show. I literally got back today from our Design Day / Neocon out of Chicago. It's our national big trade show. And there were some manufacturers that were showing these integrated ping pong tables. And you know, some people still want shuffleboard and all of that. And that might work if you are a developer. All those games and all of that wasn't for employees to play in the middle of the day. That was to keep people occupied when they were running systems at night and things were running all night long. And they're like, I need a video game. I need something to keep me awake. Mm-hmm. Like, let's play ping pong because the systems are running and we can't leave. So that's the one thing, is like really understanding again, the why. So I think a lot of those, to me, they're almost like gimmicks. If you're not a tech company, it's almost like a gimmick. Nobody came to work to play ping pong or shuffleboard with their neighbors. I want to get home. That is the one thing that we're seeing. People aren't as worried about all of that. So I would worry about the gimmicks. And the other thing, people really need to think about storage and how much storage they're buying or integrating in. It's the most expensive thing on, you know, our bill of materials, our proposals for our clients. Storage is really expensive, and what people store is just so different. That's the one thing. Like today I was looking at a floor plan and they had file cabinets. And I'm like, why do you have a file cabinet? They said, I don't know. Do you think we need them? I'm like, do you use paper? You know, like they're so expensive. But, you know, it was just like, I think, you know, if you have an office, don't you need a file cabinet? No, not really. So, you know, it's really thinking through storage, what you store, think through the gimmicks. Are you really going to use this? And then really why back to that, why are your employees coming in? Well, it's probably not to play games. Right. So those are some of the things I would tell them to leave out of this space.
Yeah, you know, that's really awesome. You know, I'm always interested in my clients' office spaces. Like, what do they look like and how comfortable are they? And you know, do they have a place for people to go have lunch and, you know, that's comfortable where they can all get together and, you know, things like that, right? Those who don't want to maybe eat at their desk like I do every day. You know, when I go to my clients, I tend to eat in their public spaces because I want to see people. I want to talk to people, right? Unless I have something to do.
Those are some of the most used spaces that we see within our own.
I believe
as well, and with our clients. Now, when we are walking spaces that used to feel very barren and dormant, the break room, but break rooms used to be like so drab and depressing. Now those spaces are by windows and there's plants and there's great branding or artwork. You know, like we were very intentional. Like we didn't have to put SKG on every wall. You know where you're at.
Right.
And me putting SKG up isn't going to inspire the employees to do a better job.
No.
But what will? And it was really a lot of the break areas and the casual settings and doing those in a variety of heights. And some in lounge chairs and some in a straight back chair. I might want to work for 30 minutes while I'm eating my lunch. I might want to sit back and read a book. The spaces that normally weren't utilized before are wildly utilized now.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. And not for nothing, when you think about, you know, that, as you said, you know, the drab former kind of, you know, food room or whatever.
Right.
You know, the question might be, well, what does your kitchen look like at home? Is it drab? I mean, my kitchen, you know, is got nothing but windows in it and a zillion plants and what are cactus called? Succulents.
Succulents. Yeah.
You know, so I've got a zillion plants, you know, I've got a cat perch on a window and my cat is like living in a forest up there. You know, when the cat wants to go sit on that, it's like there's leaves every place. Right. And I go in there and I mean, when I don't, and of course my office has lots of windows in it, but you know, I get tired of being in my office and then I'll move over to my laptop in the kitchen often because it's just a different bright. It just gets me out of here a little bit. And I think, well, you know, why are we not creating in the office what we have created at home?
It's funny that you say that. One of my very good friends, he and his wife, they have a beautiful home. And they were so intentional when they built their home. Every inch was thought through and it was welcoming and inviting. And when we go to his office, because we'll meet there for meetings with YPO, and we always laugh, we're like, wow, Frank, really inspiring office. But it's all like gray and, you know, taller panels. And it's a pretty space, but there's not a ton of life in it. And everybody's really quiet. Yeah. And it's like a library. And we just were like, this is so hilarious because your home is not at all the way the office is represented. And that's another thing to leaders is, do you want to show up in that same space? Mm-hmm. And when you do, how do you feel engaged and inspired? Because those are not the spaces that get me jazzed. So it's interesting that you say that because it's very true. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people just look at the workplace as, yeah, this is just where we go to work, and then wonder why people aren't really showing up.
Because it's not comfortable. It's not warm.
Yeah.
When you go into office spaces, and who do you typically meet with at the company? I mean, are you meeting with the CEO? Or are you meeting with somebody down the food chain somewhere? Who are you meeting with initially?
You know, that is a great question. And that literally with every single project, it changes. Many projects I have sat with the C-suite, even in extremely large businesses.
Great. Good.
Normally, it really depends on the scale of the business or the organization. Mm-hmm. You know, I would say just if you're talking about a small to medium company, we absolutely would be working with the C-suite, either the COO, could be the CEO. And it might be that we sit with the CEO for 15, 20 minutes. They're not going to be selecting the furniture per se or selecting finishes. That has happened before. But we definitely want to understand their vision for the business, their vision for the real estate, you know, why are they doing this? And then normally the COO or an office manager is running day to day. And then a lot of the times we're working with an interior design firm or an architecture firm or their corporate real estate groups that are really driving a lot of that. But day-to-day decisions that roll up to the C-suite is normally in the facilities department.
Okay.
The great thing post-COVID is they've incorporated HR, and we love that. Mm-hmm. I don't know that the facilities teams like that as much. We sure do, because everything that we do, humans touch, humans engage with. Yep. So when you have the people person alongside facilities, I just think it makes for the most dynamic spaces. They're thinking about the employee along with thinking about facilities is always thinking about maintenance, readily available. Mm-hmm. How do I clean it? Which are all great things to ask. Mm-hmm. But when we can get facilities and HR to do it together, that's great. Then we'll always have a layer of technology. You know, we're always meeting with the IT teams. They need to understand how are we going to lace tables through all the furniture. So it really is, it can run the gamut. And then, of course, the bigger the firm, the more involved the legal team gets.
Yeah, right. Of course. Yay. So, Beth, do you find that you know, like you said, you know, you sent out a survey. Do you recommend this to your clients as well? Let's see what your employees want, because I'm a huge advocate of you don't make any changes without you really should ask your employees what they're looking for. Super important. And doesn't mean they're going to get everything they want, but.
That's right. And we say that right out of the gate. Mm-hmm. But let me tell you just a few things of what you're going to find. We have saved businesses more money by doing surveys than not doing surveys.
Amazing.
Because things that the team thought they were dead set on was, hey, I will never forget this. There was a four floor project and they knew this, it was going to be their headquarters. And they said, we're going to be bringing all of our satellite offices in. We're going to have clients. You know, we were really thinking about putting like a coffee bistro, bringing in a neighboring, hiring a few people. They were dead set. They were going to reserve real estate to that, have the added expense of having a couple baristas. When they got their survey back, And that was on there. Would you want like a barista? And the employees were like, that's one of the things we love is being able to leave, go get a fun coffee and come back.
Interesting. That, no,
or I pass them on my way in. They would have spent all that money on something that wouldn't have been utilized. Mm-hmm. And we have seen that so many times where they have gone to this huge expense to bring in true food services, coffee services. And it actually detracts the employees. They're like, no, I want to get that on my way in. I've got my favorite person I like to talk to. Or I like to leave the office, break the day up, come back, do whatever. The other, you know, there is so much you can gain. And when we do our surveys, also we weave in elements around culture. Like, do you feel that you are, that you understand the direction of the business? Do you understand and buy into the culture? Or if you do, what are the things that make you feel connected to the culture or your teammates? Yeah. So we also weave in some things around HR. And if you're ever curious, I would happily, you can reach out to info@skgtexas.com. And we would send you a blank survey that you can even peel and rip. And if you want to make your own, this is not something we charge for, but it's always a value add we add to our customers. And then we love to wait for about 6 months after they move in and do a post survey after everybody sat in, they got used to their new chair, they got used to their new height adjustable table, and you kind of get over that bell curve. And then you really, you know, did we hit the mark? Or if there are things we can adapt, what would you want to adapt after the move? Yeah, we love doing this.
So I want to talk a little bit more about your workplace. And aside from the fact that you've completely just redone it to help evolve your workplace, right? You've got about 85 employees. How would you say that, I mean, aside from the fact that people seem to think that they want to dress up a little bit more to come in the office, how have you redesigned your offices to help evolve them and how your people work together?
That's a great question.
Is working? And is there anything that's not working that you thought was going to work?
Yes, sure. Yes. So we redid one of our Austin headquarters. We redid that a year ago.
Okay.
And then we changed brands that we represent. So then we had to change it again, and we literally moved back into it just a month ago.
Because you have the brands you represent in your office.
That is correct. So we had to remove them off the floor, and then we're working showroom. Oh, I know. Oy. I know. I will say not one piece went to the landfill. We were very cognizant of that. So we did deploy all of the assets. So that was exciting.
Good.
But just in that year, what we learned and how quickly space is evolving, it was pretty dramatic. So to answer that, the things that went well is we really blurred the lines between commercial and residential. And so what we say is resimmercial. We really leaned into more of a resimmercial feel that when you walked into our space, you weren't greeted with a reception desk. You weren't greeted with a bunch of SKG on the wall or anything of that nature. There's the sign on our door. People know where you're walking into. Felt like you were walking into somebody's home per se. And we had it set up that it was like a den and a dining room. And there was even this beautiful credenza that you could even like drop your keys. Like that whole notion of I come in, I drop my stuff, I can hang my coat up. Now I'm in a different space. So what we did is it's not that we bought residential furniture. It's that we were very thoughtful about the pieces we selected and the textiles that we used. And frankly, like using rugs, using planters, using shelves. So we divided space with really tall plants and planters or really tall shelves. And then we stacked pillows in them. So then they felt more acoustical and it was actually absorbing sound and visual barrier, that instead of creating a bunch of walls, we were using other elements that were softer in feel to divide space. And even in, we call it the den, it is a high-functioning team room.
Yeah,
they're back-painted glass marker boards, but they look like artwork. And it was a curved, very soft sofa. And we used tables that were at the right height, but we used different surfaces. They weren't just white laminate on a steel base. We used really beautiful finishes, and it just doesn't look industrial and cold. It looks very warm and inviting. But that was the feel we were trying to go for, because our employees were comfortable at home. So we said, well, let's make it just as comfortable when you come here, but let's lace it with enough technology that you're more productive here with the right technology than you are at home. Mm. But it feels just as comfortable. We went as far as even we have baskets with blankets. And yeah, we take the blankets home and we wash them and we bring them back, because some people, it's summer in Austin, Texas. It's hotter than blue blazes outside. Mm-hmm. So what does that mean? The AC is so cranked up. Everybody's in coats in the office, yeah, right, because it's so cold. You right. know, so then we have blankets. I see more mm-hmm. blankets out in June and July than I do in the winter months here. Isn't because of funny. The AC.
Yeah.
So we did things, and we also separated like our employee break area versus a very beautiful lounge. One of the things that we opted out of is we didn't do a large conference room. It wasn't ever used, mm-hmm. like once a month for our all hands meeting.
Yeah, it's not worth
that
it.
We opted for a beautiful lounge mm-hmm. that has a variety of seating areas. And that's where mm-hmm. we do our all hands. That's where we do our big meetings. And we roll in technology.
Yeah.
And we have gotten more use out of, you know, 600-700 square feet than we ever did a large conference room.
Yeah.
So
I love
those
that.
Were the things. That, yeah.
So what didn't work?
Sound, privacy. Oh. As much, and this was what's interesting. We had baffles. We put baffles over the mm-hmm. workstations. Mm-hmm. I will sit in this room for a podcast is everywhere that you can't see is like acoustical batting. So all of the rooms were very intentional. Out on the floor, we would have screens in between people, but they weren't tall enough. And there weren't as many as what people needed. People mm-hmm. really want more peripheral. That's the one thing post-COVID, distractions. I think we were just so used to a barrage of distractions that then when we went home and we could really control, mm-hmm. we could go to the room, shut the door, and nobody would bother us, and you're by yourself. Then, of course, you felt isolated, but you could control the amount of distractions. Then you come back to the workplace and people are moving, people are raising their desks, people are on headphones, and you're just like, that it became sensory overload. Mm. That when we redid the space, we have far more screens not only in front of people, but on the sides of people.
Oh,
and now they're all around the desks that as you raise and lower, they're not just fixed, they're actually attached to the desk. So they're kind of, you know, that peripheral buffer is rising with them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting. So people can get that privacy that they need. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. You know, and I love the fact that you talk about separating spaces, not by walls, but by other stuff, right? You know, mm-hmm. and it takes me back to when I took out the wall between my dining room and my living room, there was a big, you know, open space to walk through. And I always hated it because I wanted it more open. And once I had an engineering firm come and make sure I didn't have a weight-bearing wall there and, you know, needed to put up a beam or something, I had that wall removed. And I decided to keep pony walls at the edge of where originally the walkway was. And I remember my sister saying to me, why didn't you take out the pony walls? I said, for two reasons. One, I didn't want to have to build brand new wood floors, which is what I was going to have to do, because the wood floors, the planks in those rooms went two different directions. And I'm like,
oh, gosh.
Yeah, I don't want to spend that money for that. I'm already spending a fortune doing all this other stuff to the house. But more importantly, I had them capped with red oak, which is what I have all over my house. And I stain and seal all the wood myself, right? And on top of those pony walls, there I've got beautiful, like a plant here. I've got, you know, an antler rack over there and, you know, stuff up against those things and around them and plants and all kinds of neat stuff. And it's so warm and beautiful. And although you have a little bit of a separation of the two rooms, it's still completely wide open.
Yeah.
Right. And I sometimes wonder why, you know, more people don't think about that, you know, to create, you know, an openness yet a separate space.
Right. And that's a really big thing right now. And, you know, our industry's come a long way of providing pieces that are taller, that can mm-hmm. add like a very large room. How can I create some spatial barriers that divide this space so it's not just mm-hmm. a sea of cubes without mm-hmm. having to bring in a lot of walls?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Beth, you've been with SKG now.
11 years.
A little over 11 years. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, what What had you join them? Like, what was the attraction for you of this company, given what you'd done in the past?
I joined SKG at the time. It was called Shelton Keller Group.
Okay.
It was right as the beginning of the really big last boom for Austin and Central Texas was happening. Mm. And I had come from the manufacturing side. I came from a major market. And there was an opportunity. At first, I wasn't going to come. I was helping a friend / business partner do due diligence. And I was like, no. He had said, hey, you know, let's do this together. I'm like, no, I'm okay. And then as I was doing due diligence, I was like, man, what a great city. Mm-hmm. They're in a really neat space of evolution. And they were trying to, how do we get the dealer to the next level? Mm-hmm. And I think that's what really intrigued me was the transformation and basically getting to take a very well-respected brand mm-hmm. and elevate it and evolve it into a much larger enterprise that scaled into other cities and scaled into different vertical markets, scaled into different product segments. And I think that was very intriguing because I love that notion of scaling businesses and growing businesses,
right.
But doing it very intentionally and in the right way with people at the center of it. It's not just to build a business because I'm going to go build a big business. It was, let's do something really profound and great that resonates with people. And it's really revolves around an employee-centric mindset.
Yeah. Before we finish up, I want to take a few minutes and talk about Folio.
Yeah.
Which you are the founder and CEO of. You founded mm-hmm. it in August of 21. So, you know, closing mm-hmm. in on 5 years here. Tell us a little bit about Folio and how it fits in with SKG.
Oh, thank you. Folio, while everybody else was figuring out COVID, that was the moment that I knew I had always had it in my brain that I wanted to take all of my knowledge from the industry. And that was, you know, I'd been in the business for 25 years in our industry mm-hmm. for 25 years. I really wanted to perfect the project. And I wanted to do it with a SaaS-based tool. I wanted to do it for SKG. And I also wanted to do it for the industry. In particular, right before COVID, I mean, our industry is just now hitting the technology revolution in, you know, 2026.
Boy.
And knew that with COVID, our industry would be ripe for technology disruption. You really couldn't get people to think about. And even when we launched Folio, it was a real struggle to get dealers to engage. Most dealers were like, hey, I have a spreadsheet and we check the box and I'm fine. Folio was the first SaaS-based project management tool for our industry. And that's really, it was to help dealers run a very efficient, effective, repeatable project every single time. Mm-hmm. And it started with, there were four key elements. The first one was what we call our design wizard. And it's for that customer or the end user to fill out. And it's 8 questions to reduce 8 weeks out of the design process because it's very difficult on the dealer side to get, and really from the right people, 8 key things we need to know to go to work on their behalf. And I think it was very funny. An end user will type into a piece of technology the answers a lot faster than they will tell our seller because they're afraid they're going to be sold to. It's kind of like when you go to Nordstrom's, you never want to tell somebody what you want because you're afraid, oh my God, they're going to hang with me for the next 30 minutes and I really just want this pair of shoes. And so that's what we did with our design wizard is we wanted to remove that barrier so we could get the information. Then it goes into an automatic budgeting tool that within minutes, you get a good, better, best budget on your space because that was the second barrier is what is this going to cost? And so many of our users have never bought furniture before. So that was an element of sticker shock. Yeah. And so Folio, we created it with the industry in mind, not just one manufacturer.
Nice.
So it really isn't. And Folio doesn't sell anything. Like they don't sell furniture. So it's like, we have nothing to gain off of this. This truly is the culmination of a good, better, best on average in the industry, product agnostic. Mm-hmm. The third piece is all around ideation. We have tons and tons and tons of AI imagery that helps clients think about their space where they can say, I like this color, I don't like this.
Right.
Where with the 8 questions, a budget, and a lookbook, we can go to work as a dealer on their behalf so much faster, and we can nail it within the first time around than taking 8 or 9 turns on design specification. And then the fourth piece was we built out a checklist for dealers. So as they run their sales team, run their design team, run their project management, delivery, install, all of that, there are checklists to make sure that they are thinking through every possible scenario.
Nice.
Yeah.
Finally, would you say, do you have any current bottlenecks to your own growth right now?
Yeah. Training. Our industry is very complicated. Mm-hmm. Our industry is, it's immensely complicated, and we have to move super fast to respond. And the way I look at it is SKG needs to be high touch, high tech. And we really lean into that. But as we scale into other cities, finding talent that is ready to evolve and change. Our industry is changing just in 1 year. We're doing our own space in 1 year. It's just insane how fast our industry is changing right now. And it's super exciting. But we need to find people that are up for the challenge of change.
Right.
That will respond all the time to our clients, because our clients love technology. Everybody wants Amazon fast, but they want people to help them do it.
Yeah.
And with a very complicated industry, training people to understand what we do and then evolve with all the changes of technology and products and our clients, getting people job ready is really difficult in our industry.
Mm-hmm. I love it. Is there anything I have neglected to ask you that you want to talk about?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so. This is super fun and engaging. And rarely do I get to talk about, you know, the why or talk directly to other leaders. And if you get a chance to think about your space, to think about it differently. So that was super, super fun. Normally that's what I have to add in at the end.
Mm-hmm. Well, good. Well, Beth Goff McMillan, CEO of SKG and founder and CEO of Folio. Thanks so much for being with me. It feels like it's been forever since we first talked. But I'm so glad we finally got to have this conversation.
Likewise, Carol. It's been great. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to Evolving Your Workplace. Is there a topic you want to discuss? Let us know what you think in a review. And don't forget to click follow to stay up to date on upcoming episodes. Thanks again for listening, and see you next time.